entirely by business needs. And ideally, hardware availability and the hardware refresh cycle should be decoupled from activity upgrading the infrastructure software. If we look at enterprise hardware, the manufacturers would like you to believe that the replacement cycle is measured substantially shorter than a decade. So I'm sure if Dell, HP, or IBM could get customers onto a 3-year enterprise server refresh cycle, they would be delighted. But we do know that anything that stays in production for 7 or 8 years is well past its sell-by date and is obsolete in terms of its maintainability, in terms of its vendor support, in terms of its footprint, both physical and electrical. So there's this real mismatch between the life cycle in hardware, the life cycle in software. And of course, as we look at the way we're building enterprise systems now, we discover that the role of enterprise software, of infrastructure software, is just getting greater and greater. If you take a snapshot of all of the software running within an enterprise data center, more and more of it every generation is infrastructure software. The standard SAP packages, Oracle packages, NQ, and less of it is customized business logic. So this dichotomy in the life cycle period between hardware and software is only going to get worse. So putting that together, the goals that are driving the people who build data centers today or manage data centers are driven in essentially three categories. One is straightforward cost reduction. So simplify your data center and reduce costs. You deploy standardized hardware platforms, increasingly upon commodity industry standard hardware, x86, Intel or Opteron servers, and so on. Cost reduction is driving power permit figures. Both major silicon vendors are very keen on those benchmarks. Air conditioning, floor space, we've heard multiple times today during this conference on the pressures driving those changes. And particularly significant in this event is the drive to virtualize everything. This is a common mantra amongst all of the users we're talking to and many of the system OEMs. We commonly see, we take for granted now, again, particularly at this event, that server consolidation drives utilizations up by large factors. And we're just beginning to see the tipping point for more sophisticated drivers for virtualization. Rapid provisioning, disaster recovery, load balancing, high availability, and those management features, which are, I suspect, going to deliver much more value to end users than simply the server consolidation, which is the first order benefit from virtualizing. So, if we go back to our cartoons, a snapshot of the ideal data center that we would like to build for the next decade is completely homogeneous. We replicate the same hardware units, the same software units, fully virtualized, so everything can be driven from a single management console, and deploying a common set of management facilities for provisioning, for monitoring, for availability, for performance, for load balancing, failover, all of these good things. And VMware is great at doing that, but for a limited set of enterprise problems. So, if we look at the virtualization route for IBM workloads, for Unisys workloads, for Sun workloads, for HP workloads, each vendor has its own preferred virtualization architecture. And in reality, our data centers are full of all sorts of different pieces of equipment, different pieces of software. So there are some difficulties in consolidating an entire data center into a new, ideal, virtualized, homogeneous server environment. The road is not as simple as vendors make out. The process takes much, much longer than anyone would like, and is significantly more costly than would be ideal. Isn't that always the case? We always like to get everything for free. So, I apologize again for leading you through this very slowly, but I do want to emphasize the fact that there is a mismatch between VMware's current offerings and the CIO's concerns in large heterogeneous data centers. And there is a hole in the offering. Clearly, I'm going to talk about filling that hole using QuickTransit, which is a product that we use for migrating applications between operating systems and between instruction sets. QuickTransit allows software written for one microprocessor, one operating system, to run transparently on a different microprocessor and operating system with no source code changes and no binary changes. The QuickTransit product consists of two major functionality modules. One is the dynamic binary translator, which translates between instruction sets. One is the operating system call mapping module, which translates between operating system calls in the two environments. And at VMware here, we've announced the availability of our first RISC Unix translator, which supports Solaris Spark workloads in an Intel Linux environment, in an x86 Linux environment. Delving yet more deeply into the QuickTransit product, we build the binary translation technology in a modular manner where we reuse an optimizing kernel across all of our different products which support different instruction sets. The from instruction set is supported by an instruction decoder. The hardware that we're running on is supported by a code generator. But the vast majority of QuickTransit technology is embedded within our optimizing kernel and is reused from one product to another. So QuickTransit operates at runtime by translating instructions from, in this case, from Spark instruction set into intermediate representation. We optimize that intermediate representation multiple times adaptively as the application is running. We co-generate from that IR. We store our generated code in a code cache, and we reuse that code from the code cache as the application runs. QuickTransit is a very natural fit with VMware, and you'll see at the right-hand side there what we're bringing to the VMware environment. Everything to the left of the center is absolutely standard. On the right, we have a couple of VMs that are running Solaris Spark applications, workloads, if you like, in VMs. And those VMs are standard VMware VMs. They're running a Linux distribution, and they're therefore manageable in exactly the same way as any other VMware VM within the data center. What about performance is the first order question. This capability would be interesting, would be academically interesting, but is only of interest in reality if one can get useful amounts of work through it. We can regard performance as having three main characteristics. There's computational workload. If you have a computation that is doing no I.O., that is purely number crunching for hours at a time. There's graphics performance, if you're interacting with a graphics application, and there's interactive performance. And the headline performance for our product is summarized at the bottom there. So if you were able to do a full native port, a recompilation of your computational workload on the hardware you're running at, you would get 100% performance. QuickTransit offers you 80% of that native performance. The graphics performance is transparent, and the interactive performance is transparent. And you just don't know that anything is being translated. You interact with these applications, whether they be graphics or line, command line applications, in exactly the same way as you do with a native application in the Solaris Spark environment. And Intel are so good at producing x86 hardware that today the fastest way of running Spark code is through QuickTransit on Intel hardware. And of course, the vast majority of Spark hardware out there in the field isn't today's fastest Spark hardware. It's UltraSpark 1s, UltraSpark 2s. And for those systems, QuickTransit on Intel hardware delivers 2 or 4x times the performance of the older Sun servers. So given that the Sun servers themselves are operating at a few percentage utilization, the consolidation that's possible on modern hardware is pretty significant. Functionality is critically important. And we offer full application functionality, that is, we guarantee that any application that runs on a Solaris Spark system will run through QuickTransit on an x86 system. We also guarantee interoperability between the translated Spark world and the native x86 world. So the benefit that this brings is that the data center manager can migrate his entire workload from Spark Solaris to x86 overnight, and incrementally he can replace parts of that workload with native x86 applications and do a full native migration at a pace that's determined by the business requirements. It's no longer determined by the need to refresh hardware. And the mantra we use with all of our customers is everything just works. Everything works so well that installation, management, and invocation of applications is just transparent. The systems administration is very straightforward, particularly to anyone who has administered a Solaris environment. And users can start applications, can interact with them in exactly the same way as they do in a native Solaris environment. They simply don't need to know that any translation is going on. Features of the product, headline features of the product we're announcing this week. We're supporting 32-bit and 64-bit Spark Solaris applications, so there's full support there. We support the full UltraSpark instruction set, V8, V8+, V9, the VIS extensions. Support for binaries from really quite old Solaris 2.6 right up to Solaris 10, Solaris Express applications current today. And support for the complete Solaris environment. So anything, when I say bringing workloads across, I mean any workloads, whether it's single applications or multiple applications, connected by scripts, everything just works. And we support Red Hat and SUSE distributions. And at this stage, I suspect that many of you are thinking, this is all smoke and mirrors. How can this possibly work? So I have a few slides showing an animation of the steps that we go through as an application runs. So this is all happening at runtime. The user starts an application running, double clicks on the application, if it's a desktop app, in the same way as you would in a Solaris environment. The operating system discovers that that's a Solaris application, calls QuickTransit. QuickTransit starts by decoding the first block of instructions to be executing, building intermediate representation, and then co-generating from that IR to form a block of code that sits in the code cache. We then execute that block of code natively on the x86 hardware, and we've reached the logical point of the end of the first block of instructions in the Solaris application. So we do the same thing again. We decode a block of Solaris Spark instructions, we build that into the intermediate representation, we co-generate from the intermediate representation, put that block of code in the code cache, and execute it. And you can guess what happens next. We repeat these steps. And as we do that, we end up with more and more blocks of instructions in the code cache. And clearly, we can come back and re-execute those blocks of instruction in the code cache without retranslating them. But what's really interesting is when we start to detect hotspots of code within our code cache. So these would have been hotspots within the Spark application on the left. But as we detect them, as we're executing those hotspots in the code cache, we can come back and re-optimize the intermediate representation that those blocks came from and generate a more highly optimized version of that hotspot and replace the hotspot in the code cache and execute that the next time. So that's the mechanics of the multiple re-optimization steps that go on at runtime as the application is running, as QuickTransit is discovering where the hotspots are. And that's key to the high performance that we offer. Again, the first order question at this point is, how can it be possible? How can this possibly deliver anything like interactive performance? Well, I'm going to challenge you later to answer that question yourselves. Clearly, in this presentation, I can only address the very highest level aspects of the product. But embedded within our translation technology is fine-grained attention to an incredible amount of critical details. For example, the Spark has a big endian memory addressing model. If you address bytes within a word in an ascending sequence, you first get the most significant byte, the next most significant byte, and you get the least significant byte last. On the x86, we have a little endian memory addressing model. So if you address bytes within a word, the first byte you get is the least significant byte. This is a pain for anyone who's written networking code, particularly networking code on a Spark processor that they try to port to an x86. Tracking down the last case where somebody has forgotten to swizzle the bytes within a word is a real debugging nightmare. But that is handled transparently within our translator. Spark has a great instruction set architectural innovation called registered windows. They provide a large number of physical registers on chip with a program-driven renaming scheme, driven on procedure boundaries usually, that eliminate much of the memory traffic to do with saving and restoring registers at procedure boundaries. How do you implement that on x86? x86 on a good day has about 6 addressable registers. The floating point precision of x86 is somewhat different from Spark, and if you're interested in fine-grain, highly detailed mathematical calculations, you get subtly different answers out of x86 than out of a Spark machine. And some people really care about that stuff. So again, those details are important to us. Everything just works as it did on the Spark. When we move up a level in the stack from the instruction set translation to the operating system translation, again, things don't get any easier. System calls are dramatically different between Solaris and between Linux. Structures are different, the encodings are different, the numberings are different. 32-bit and 64-bit Solaris applications have different facilities available in their API. The threading models are subtly different in the two environments. The signal handling is subtly different, and particularly the interaction between signal handling and threading. But I hope you're beginning to expect that I'll say everything just works. And then when we come to the complete application environment, life gets yet more complex. And for obvious reasons, we support a complete Solaris environment in our product. And that includes libraries, it includes utilities, it includes file store, it includes /proc, it includes shell scripts, it includes Java. Why would you want to translate Java, you ask? Java's portable. You could just run it native on the x86. Well, it turns out that many installation scripts in the Solaris world depend upon Solaris Java. So, again, in order to make sure that everything just works, we support the full set of Solaris environmental facilities to ensure that once you've installed our environment in a VM or within a Linux system, you just go ahead and run the standard Solaris installers to install the Solaris application. And then you have the full Solaris environment to run your workload in. So the benefits that bringing Solaris workloads into a VMware environment are immediate and probably more obvious to you guys than they are to me. Once you've brought your Solaris workload into a VM, you can then roll that VM out in exactly the same way as you do any other VM within VMware. You can use DRS to do resource allocation. You can do failover using VMware HA. And all of a sudden, one of the major barriers to virtualizing an entire data center has gone away, because you're bringing this heterogeneous environment, the native x86 workloads plus the native Spark workloads, all into a common x86-based VMware environment where you can just reuse all of your processes, all of your skill sets, and everything else you've invested in. And of course, you can dynamically reconfigure your compute environment to change the balance of Solaris and x86 using exactly the same tools. We're talking to a number of large and demanding data center users. In fact, this major Wall Street bank has had our product in beta for some months now. The problem that they've been facing is pretty well identical to the problem I outlined at the beginning of this talk. Their IT infrastructure is very large and very complex and full of legacy servers. So I haven't detailed all of the x86 servers they're consolidating, but at the start of their internal migration project, they had around 6,000 Spark servers. They've taken the strategic decision to move to an industry standard server platform, largely Blade based. They're moving 100% of their workload to Linux, and they're moving to a 100% virtualized environment. In the first couple of years, the migration proceeded very smoothly according to plan. So many ISV applications were as available on x86 as they were on Solaris. So that migration went very smoothly. For in-house applications, in particular applications that were live and being continuously developed, getting the development team to start using the new environment was a very reasonable proposition. So getting those in-house apps across to the new environment as part of the development of the application just went ahead. And at the end of a couple of years, they'd migrated about 3,000 servers. They then discovered that the pace of transition slowed dramatically. The difficulties, of course, were all of the unfortunate effects that for internally developed applications, anything that was just running, anything that just sat at the back of the data center and ran day in, day out, with no maintenance or any requirement, it was very difficult to justify putting internal development effort into doing a full port from Solaris, from Spark to x86. Because the development teams are very focused on the major business needs of the organization itself. And that's the best case. Organizational memory in software applications is very easy to lose, particularly in large organizations. So even if you have the source code for a large internal development that took place a decade ago, finding people who understand how to do a source port of that application is hard. And of course, major Wall Street banks have been a victim of their own success, and a lot of consolidation has taken place after acquisitions, and again, institutional memory is very easy to waste. We all laugh about applications where the source code is lost, but that's a live and active problem for many customers today. For ISVs, the situation is even worse. ISVs actively supporting the Solaris environment, by and large, many of them have migrated to industry standard platforms now. Some of them haven't. Some of them are still evaluating the business requirements. More seriously, an ISV will carry out a system migration as part of product development. So again, the latest, greatest versions of software appear on all of the current modern platforms. But for a customer who wants to migrate a complex Oracle 8 database off of Spark onto x86 Linux, may find that Oracle 8 isn't well supported in the x86 environment. And of course, some ISVs have simply fallen victim to natural selection and have disappeared altogether. So the consequence of that snapshot of the bank's internal migration project is that although if you stand far enough back from the problem, doing a migration, doing a strategic migration should be very simple, in practice, all of these irritating details get in the way. So internal software development teams are not as responsive to the needs of the data center manager as they might be. External ISVs are not always in the best position to give the best support needed for data center migrations. And the net effect is that server migrations take approximately forever with the natural financial consequences. I'm looking forward to coming back to VMworld in a year's time and update that case study with exactly the findings of deploying Quick Transit and how we solved the last remaining problem for their migration, and how they're very happy in their new 100% virtualized, 100% modern blade sensor based industry standard hardware environment. So put a note in your diary for 12 months time. Shifting gears a little bit, where else can we see this technology being deployed? Well, today, about 3.5 million users are using Quick Transit inside Apple Macintosh systems. Transitive supplies Rosetta, the technology that Intel is shipping to run PowerPC-based applications on Intel-based hardware, and most of those 3.5 million users simply don't know the software is there. Currently, about 12,000 ISV applications run on Macintoshes and have no Intel-based package available. SDI deployed our technology as part of a high-performance, a high-end graphics workstation to run internally developed and ISV applications for visualization. And Intel is a great partner for us. So the products I'm talking about today are the first released under this umbrella development effort to bring RISC workloads to Intel Xeon hardware. So how would we go about using our technology in VMware infrastructure? When we virtualize a large and complex data center, then clearly it's an advantage to take the path of least resistance. So the first step is to consolidate the x86s onto VMware. The second step is to bring Spark workloads into x86 systems and then consolidate those virtual Sparks, again, using VMware. And doing that step gives you the new management freedom to replicate the legacy VM, to re-optimize the legacy VM, to change the number of instances that run, the number of processors supplied to that VM, the amount of CPU share it gets. So we're bringing new life to these legacy applications and allowing people to re-optimize them in ways that suit today's needs, rather than the needs of the developer and the deployer when the systems were first created. A use case example, we sometimes show this example at trade shows. We haven't got enough room to set it up here, unfortunately. We might bring a large ASE database from a Spark Solaris system and run that in one VM. I'm showing a VMware console there simply to reinforce the message. In another system, we might use VMs to run a mixture of Windows clients, an Oracle server, a SQL Plus application, message queue, a workload simulator talking over the network to the back end. So we're very comfortable with these large enterprise applications, and we're very comfortable with showing some very demanding data center uses being run on our translation environment. I promised VMware that I would demonstrate the product in front of your very eyes so that you can see all of the smoke and mirrors for yourself. I can do that most effectively by lifting up this Apple box here. The slides are all presented through PowerPoint running on the Mac. And if I ask PowerPoint to tell me what it thinks is going on, If you look very, very closely, you'll see that this is a 2004 version of PowerPoint for the Mac. This is the latest version of PowerPoint. You can't buy anything newer. And of course, in 2004, there were no Intel-based Macintoshes. So everybody today who's running Microsoft Office or Adobe Photoshop or any one of Adobe Acrobat, any one of 12,000 ISV applications on the Mac is using the Rosetta translation layer, is using QuickTranslate, in other words, to run that software. So if we look at an activity monitor to see what's going on this Mac, if you delve really, really deeply, you can see in the final column on the right there, there was a small number of PowerPC processes running within the Mac OS environment, where everything else is running native Intel. Down in the booth, we have a setup where we're showing a couple of Spark Solaris applications running within QuickTranslate, within a VMware container. And I'd encourage you to go along and have a look at the booth. My apologies for that duplicated slide. What I'd like you to prod at in the demonstration is, can you see full transparency? Or are there things you can do to the application that look a bit as if it's running under translation? Can you see a decent level of performance from our computational applications? We've got a visualization app running downstairs that calculates and displays some pretty complex 3D visualization stuff. So try it for yourselves and see if you believe some of these outrageous claims that I'm making. So I'm just about to wrap up here. What I'd like to leave you with is the thought that there's a major opportunity for another wave of server consolidation from heterogeneous workloads with a mixture of Spark and x86 workloads to a homogeneous environment where we're just using x86 servers. QuickTranslate is changing the way that computing works. Apple was able, largely due to this technology, to do a complete migration from PowerPC to Intel processors in the space of 210 days. We're running our demonstrations downstairs. Please come and have a look at them. And lastly, we have a VMware appliance for evaluating the product, and that's available today. Ian's holding up a copy of the DVD there. What you do is you copy the appliance from the DVD into your 64-bit VMware virtual machine area, and you can bring up our full set of demos, exactly the same demos as we're running in the booth. You can install your own Solaris applications on top, and evaluate those. So if you're interested in doing that within your organizations, talk to our guys at the back, or come and talk to the booth. Okay, that's my slide done. Can I take questions? Can I ask people who'd like to ask questions to come and talk at the microphone so everyone can hear, please? Could you use the microphone, please?
How can you PTP to the Spark system to the VMware?
I'm sorry, how can we...
P2B.
How can we P2B?
Yeah.
That's a great question. We don't have a P2B product currently. So to build a Solaris environment, what you need to do is take a Linux environment, install our software, and then install the Solaris applications within that environment. But you, many people are asking us about P2V. So many people are asking us about taking a physical Solaris environment and using that to build a virtual x86 environment. And we hear loud and clear, and we take that message.
Oh, hi, I'm with PlateSpin, and I think we might be looking at the answer for you. So, but my question was different. Is there a reason why you don't do any pre-processing? So why do you do all the optimization in runtime again and again and again as opposed to doing
that? Yep, that's a great question. Why do we do it all at runtime? Why don't we save some time? Why don't we make runtime faster by doing some pre-processing earlier on, maybe at install time, anything else? The answer is that doing it all at runtime is the way of getting maximum transparency of everything. So the penalty of doing it at runtime is so small that we can afford to pay that cost. So as far as users are concerned, there is no visible cost from doing it at runtime. And therefore, we get the maximum transparency of the product.
Did you go through the thought process of considering doing the pre-process? How do you consider the pre-process?
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that offline. But come and have a look at the demo and see if you still think that it's necessary. Next, please.
Two questions.
Okay, so question one, what about vendor support? Vendor support is very similar to vendor support under VMware in the early days. For the killer application for this technology is where there is no support on the x86 platform at all. And that applies most heavily to internally developed applications within an organization and to ISV applications which are dead, defunct, or whatever. So in those circumstances, you're as well supported in the new platform as you were on the old platform. You're right in that for major live applications, vendors are keen on minimizing their support matrix by supporting as few environments as possible. What we found with Silicon Graphics and with Apple, as vendors become more comfortable with the assertion that things just work and are completely transparent, they become more comfortable with adding this technology to their support matrix. But I can't oversimplify. That is an issue that will work itself out. Not overnight, but as the adoption of this technology increases. I beg your pardon, yes. Libraries. When you install our product, you get the full environment that the native Spark Solaris environment would provide. So as you bring an application in, that application may rely upon standard Solaris libraries, which we've already installed. It may bring it in its own shared libraries, in which case we translate those as well. So as far as applications are concerned, everything the application is already there or is provided to the application in the same way as it would be in a native Spark environment.
Okay. Is there any plan to supports Layer 686 along with Linux as a guest OS to run a quick transit. So now it's Linux, and then you layer on quick transit.
Right.
And then you run the Spark application. And is there any plan that also supports Layer 686 at that,
okay,
that layer with Linux?
Yeah, I understand. Today we're translating from Spark Solaris to Linux x86. Sun also have Solaris running native on x86. And the question is, does Transdev have any plans to support that configuration? We've not announced anything yet. It's a question that has been asked multiple times over. And as a young and responsive small organization, we listen very carefully to what potential customers are telling us, but nothing announced. More questions? Gentlemen there.
Part of the business case for moving from Spark to x86 is obviously the lower acquisition cost of x86. So when you factor in the transitive software and the 20% performance premium, any perspective on how much it discounts the financial case to move across to x86?
It depends upon multiple dimensions of what you're coming from and what you're going to. We're doing some fairly elaborate ROI studies with big customers to explore that space. But, I mean, in headline terms, if you compare Sun's current Spark offerings and current x86-based offerings, everything we've looked at is actually a pretty compelling case to make that migration. If you want to explore that in more detail, please come and talk to us about that. Two guys over here.
Any plans to work for other flavors of units, such as HTTPS?
Again, we listen very carefully to all of those demands. We haven't anything announced currently. Okay. One thing we have announced is that we have a partnership with IBM, which is focused around bringing x86 applications to the Power architecture, which is the other way around from this Apple product. And IBM, of course, are interested in expanding the ecosystem of applications available within Power. Power has some pretty unique MIPS, power, floor space, density type characteristics. And, of course, they're interested in making it a standard platform. So having every x86 application available within Power is something they're interested in. I guess we ought to take one more question and then stop. I'm happy to carry on outside, but we're going to get thrown out of the room very shortly. We'll be around the booth for the rest of the day and tomorrow in the solutions session. So if I don't get round to your question, please come and talk to me afterwards.
Our experience with Solaris is pretty robust operating system, but every once in a while it requires some patches. Since you're emulating so much of the Solaris environment under Linux, how do you handle that?
In a VM supporting a Solaris workload, there are multiple maintenance requirements. You potentially need to maintain the Linux infrastructure within the VM to maintain our layer of software and the Solaris environment that we provide, as well as the application that's running within that. So no magic bullets, I'm afraid. One does need to maintain each one of those layers. Exactly. Yeah. What we're expecting is that people will develop VM-based common practices, best practices for doing that. And again, you know, doing that within a VM, in a VMware environment, is substantially different from doing it on a physical Solaris hardware machine. So you win some, you lose some. It swings around about. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for being very responsive, some great questions. I look forward to talking to people afterwards.